views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Get ready for a game changer. Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sarah will bring you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Now here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall, and you're listening to Conscious Business Radio on the Transformation Talk Radio Network. Do you believe the Second Amendment is at risk? Some people believe that the right to bear arms has essentially been removed from our Constitution and from the land by imposing so many laws and restrictions that it just no longer exists. I don't know if that's true or not, because obviously it's not completely gone and people can buy guns. But advocates of the strict gun law claim that the violence and murder rate in our country is excessively high and is due to a society with a fanatic gun culture where criminals have easy access to guns. And maybe they have a point. It is a $6 billion industry, the guns and the arms that go into it. But on the other hand, gun owners believe that we are safer with the high percentage of gun ownership among responsible citizens. They state that this curbs gun violence, as bad guys are afraid to commit crimes when they know gun owners could be nearby. Well, you're really not going to know what the truth is because it's fairly intuitive to think that if you get guns off the street, that there's going to be less gun violence. It just seems to make sense in your gut. However, when you look at the numbers and you look at the numbers from an unbiased standpoint and look at them objectively, the numbers don't say that. And that's what's really amazing. I tried to look at this stuff from a really objective standpoint, looking at what the stats say. And it's amazing what I found. What I found is that people that want to restrict gun laws are doing quite a bit to take things out of context to make it seem, to make it match their agenda. And so you have to be really careful with some of these stats that they're putting forward. There was a person from Chicago. He was with the University of Chicago. His name is John Lott. And back in the 90s, he was doing a study to prove it, that guns are violent and that they create... Well, not guns are violent, but they create a violent culture. And he was going to prove that based on the stats, that was the point. He really got into it. He really wanted to prove this issue so that once and for all, it could be put to rest. Well, as he dove into it, he realized the opposite was true. And he published his works. And it's in the book called More Guns, Less Crime. His name is John Lott. And you can find that on the internet. But he went at it specifically as he was pro what Obama is for right now. And he went to prove that and came out with the exact opposite findings based on his research. So it's a really interesting thing. His book again is More Guns, Less Crime. But what I learned is that the stats out there, you have to be really careful where you get it and what you're looking at, because I couldn't believe how skewed everything was. Well, so this episode, I'm bringing Mark Biggie. He's the founder and CEO of Biggie Defense to give us some views on this issue and some other issues. He's a military contractor and he serves multiple branches of the military, FBI and local police departments. And he has quite a bit of contacts in those, in that industry. And he is going to, talk about gun ownership, but also what does the military and the local police departments think of all this stuff. And we also talk about the police departments being militarized. Is that true? And what are they getting for equipment? And why would they be getting this stuff? And then we're also going to talk about federal land usage. Because if you look at the United States, from when we bought the Louisiana Purchase, all that over is, you know, to the west, from about two-thirds over from our country, you know, the last one-third going from east to west is a significantly high portion of federal land. And basically, with the Louisiana Purchase, they just made that federal land. And that goes against what the notion of our Constitution was. And basically, once the state has ownership of this land or controls it, that it's supposed to go in the jurisdiction of the state, which is not what the federal government is doing. So it's really interesting topic, and it's pretty timely with that Oregon standoff and what they're doing there. So I get his opinions on that as well to see, you know, what his thoughts are. So let's now welcome Mark Biggie to the program.
Hey, Mark, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. Appreciate coming.
Well, you are a Department of Defense contractor, and you're really connected with that whole world. And so I'm going to be asking you questions about that and kind of popular things that are going on right now and see what your opinion is. Things mm-hmm. have been really moving in certain directions. And my first question here is, do you believe that the local police forces are being militarized? In other words, are they being purposely given military-grade weapons for advanced population control? And this is something that you'll hear in, you know, some of the alternative media, and they're claiming all this. And I want to hear what your opinion is on that.
Well, a lot of the reports you get, I hate to say it, but sensationalize the actual facts. Majority of police departments are woefully under-equipped, and what equipment they do have is extremely substandard. I can't get into certain aspects because I wouldn't want to endanger certain areas of the police departments, but coast-to-coast, middle America has needs great improvements. Some rural police departments in coastal areas, too. I've seen this here in a little town of Millinocket, Maine, and understaffed, under-equipped. Stuff they have is, you know, is good, but not to the degree that, the Los Angeles Police Department has. Now, a lot of police departments do get these up-armored
tanks.
Vehicles.
Yeah, but they'll get, like, vehicles. Tanks and stuff, right? Or is that
not tanks, but, you know, they... They're armored vehicles. You know, a tank is a tracked vehicle. But
why would they need that, for example?
Well, if you're in a shootout situation and you need to get close to the building so you can deploy your troops in your police department. That's almost a weird way I said that. But you need to get close enough to the building so your SWAT team can get into the building without getting shot. A lot of the armor currently some of these SWAT vehicles do have is, you know, if you use a big enough, I don't want to go.
So you believe they probably need it under certain circumstances.
Oh, yeah.
It's probably needed.
Definitely. In fact, even in rural Maine, we've had a couple of instances where the perpetrator has a high caliber weapon that can pierce just about a lot of the current armor that police departments use. So if you roll up with a MRAP vehicle or a up-armored Humvee, something, you know, they only give them basically leftovers. They don't give them the brand-new vehicles off the market that are currently being fielded in country. We're talking leftover MRAPs or up-armored Humvees that, you know, they've been used, rehabbed and reused again, and then all of a sudden they're getting at the end of their life cycle, and so, you know, give it to a police department that may need to use it. So they may sit in that police department's parking lot for months and months and months. In fact, in the town of Mexico, Maine, they received an up-armored vehicle that would cost them more money to utilize it, and it just sits there, and no one uses it, but it was donated, and so the town said, sure, we'll take it. But throughout the more populated areas, when you're talking about riots, what happens if somebody pulls out something very heavy and starts opening up on the cops? If you don't have that capability to either get your people out of there or put more people into a certain area without getting hurt, these vehicles are very necessary. Now, I'm not saying that there's a fear of certain things like Is the government, for example, the FEMA stories true? To some extent, yes. And
what do you mean by FEMA stories? What specific ones?
The FEMA camps or the ammunition things. They've stocked up, stockpiled capabilities for years.
Yeah, but why are they, like, they've bought so many bullets and weapons. Why are they doing that? And why do they have FEMA camps? You know, like in,
the camps, I believe, was to house a lot of the materials. I went to one of the camps here in Maine, and I looked it over, and it really wasn't intentionally built to house people or to hold them within, like a prison. I saw a lot of equipment there.
Now, why do they have so much equipment? Why does FEMA have so much?
Well, a lot of it can be utilized in disaster relief, but there are some issues that are, do raise concerns. I mean, I never saw a FEMA camp that specifically would hold people. And I saw some pictures here and there. I investigated it. I didn't find any too much validity to it. Could it be turned into a prison camp? Sure, anything could be turned into a prison camp. But the one story from a Department of Defense a contractor's point of view, the ammunition one, you know, the stories about the ammunition being bought up, that's true.
Yeah, why did they do that?
A lot of people are speculating this, that, or the other thing about it, and you know, it's...
Who knows at this point, but they did it.
Well, they did it. I mean, just like here's a, for instance, there was a, under the current, Washington had a quiet initiative to ask law enforcement officers coast to coast, would you support a lawful order to collect weapons? And a lot of people were very shocked when they heard that. And the response pretty much unanimously coast to coast was, no, we won't, because essentially that's, you know, you're breaking the Constitution, much like the current story from today about what the current administration is trying to do as far as, you know, curtail our right to own, buy, sell, or, you know, whatever, guns.
So they specifically asked everyone whether they would support confiscating guns?
Not everyone. There were certain members and departments that were asked, and I was told by more than one law enforcement official about the question, and certain military police were actually asked as well. So that was, you know, a little bit troubling, but that goes to the situation that we're currently in right now. Is it a lawful order? Is it constitutional? And the answer is no.
It's against the Second Amendment.
Well, it's against the Constitution, period. There's so many reasons why, just other than the Second Amendment, it's just not right
you don't just take people's property and everything else. But now the federal government there's a lot of stuff going through that are restricting firearms and things, but it doesn't seem, it's not like they're taking guns away. Some of the measures from a media standpoint seems very, you know, plausible, like that you have to do, you just don't want it in the hands of bad guys, but why?
The prime reason here that to oppose something like this is, you're giving in an inch at a time, eroding away at the Second Amendment, our right to own. And you're giving more control to the government as far as a database. And we've seen in more than one occasion databases can be breached, sold off, hacked, utilized as data for companies to utilize or misuse, or governments to misuse. I personally know about three instances that high-level Department of Defense information that could have gone sideways in a horrible way on a global scale went missing over a weekend.
I can't get into it, but
you can probably draw your own conclusion.
You are listening to Business Game Changers, and we need to take a short station break.
What if we really didn't have to die to go to heaven? Are you curious about the afterlife or rebirth? The highly anticipated new book from author Dr. Susan Allison, You Don't Have to Die to Go to Heaven, is available now. Find out how to find guidance and healing in the spirit realms. Order the book today and put it on your must-read list for 2016. Visit drsusanallison.com to learn more.
Are you ready for a game changer? Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in to Business Game Changers Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Has asthma or allergies got you singing the raspy blues? Allergy and Asthma Networks is the nation's premier nonprofit patient-centered network of doctors, caregivers, patients, and healthcare professionals who are dedicated to ending death and suffering due to asthma, allergies, and related conditions. Join President and CEO Tanya Winders each month on the Dr. Pat Show to learn more and visit AllergyAsthmaNetwork.org today. Breathe better together with Allergy and Asthma Network.
Introducing the Lucid Planet, a digital gathering place featuring cutting-edge, high-vibrational content that will empower and inspire you to become the greatest version of yourself. Visit the Lucid Planet today to stimulate your mind, body, and soul as you connect with a global community of like-minded people. The Lucid Planet is edited by renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly Neff, who is here to help you cope with anxiety, connect to your higher purpose, uncover your true passions, and live your dreams. Dr. Kelly's fresh, compassionate perspective emphasizes growth, transformation, healing, and thriving, even in the face of adversity. Say goodbye to bad news and low vibrational media for good and become part of the larger collective of people working together to navigate the global shift of consciousness and transform the world from within. Join the planet, the Lucid Planet. Visit thelucidplanet.com. Welcome home.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. And don't forget, you can always go to my website at sarahwestall.com and hear this episode and past episodes of Business Game Changers. And now we are bringing back Mark Biggie.
Is the system infallible? Yes. Is the possibility that that the government could curtail our rights? Yeah, it's an ongoing battle.
Isn't the point
pro gun versus anti gun people and the movements? And should we fear it? No. Should we be on guard? Yes.
Well, isn't the point that bad guys don't follow the rules anyways? So all you're doing is putting more rules in the hands of good guys. The bad guys are going to figure out how to do it anyways.
Exactly. That was what I was trying to lead to. But if all of a sudden, tomorrow, and I don't know how they would get away with it, but they were to outlaw guns altogether. And it's not without precedent in the United States. It's already happened in San Francisco to some small degree, and it's that they started it. But the fact is that we the people wouldn't stand for it.
But what is their what are the perspective of people that want to do that? What is their reasoning to want to do that?
Well, the fear of all the gun violence or the violence period. They think by taking the guns out of the hands of everybody that there'll be peace. Bottom line is that there will always be guns. No matter if you make them out illegal, what's altogether, there will always be guns.
Well, you know how like in China where they don't have guns? Is it more peace?
Well,
is that not true? Is there lots of guns in China? Because there are certain countries. Go ahead.
For instance, Mexico, the country of Mexico, They're not supposed to have guns. But just last night on A&E, there was a movie called Cartelland. And it showed that two perspectives, one from the border guys that are volunteering their time because of our porous borders in the United States with Mexico, their version of what they're looking at, you know, their problems and the federal government's lack of being able to secure the border, and also the Mexican version. If you get away from just the viewpoint of the drug cartel, just the rural Mexicans themselves, the battles that they face with what's going on, it's the government itself is so corrupt, it's not funny.
Well, yeah, the government in Mexico is very corrupt. But now, isn't that the scary part of this country as well, is that how there's so much corruption here, especially we've seen it, especially in the financial world, but the federal government has done some pretty corrupt things to people that when you look into stories and things, it's appalling. Some of the things that they did, you can't believe that they're doing. They abuse their power at times. And so is it possible that if you're put on a database, they could just decide you don't get a gun? Now, you didn't do anything wrong. But next thing you know,
that's the whole crux of the point. That do you trust the federal government with that much information? I mean, we know that for a fact that the current initiative that he put forward this morning is going to be gone come January 1st of 2017. There's not a candidate out there that that's. Well, I'm sorry, I can't say that. But the pro-gun movement will literally crush that. The fact is that some.
Do you think that will even?
I think
will
at least one person has already said that they'll support that initiative and continue it. And I don't think that that's going to come to be, you know, true. I don't think that we have anything to worry about. In the long run, we the people, we want to have our own guns. We don't want government in our lives. And I mean, look at the healthcare thing, that whole ACA. That's going to be done in January of 2017 as well.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how things go, because there's been a lot of executive actions that have gone through. But, you know, it's interesting because there's been a lot of – I had the Freedom of the Press, the Daphne Helgen is her name, and she was the head of the Freedom of the Press. They do the Freedom of the Press Index. It's Reporters Without Borders. And she was talking about how – you know, the persecution of whistleblowers. And that's why we've went down to 49th in the world in freedom of the press. Really huge drop. And the reason is the persecution of whistleblowers, and freedom of the press is actually going lower across the entire world, but we're kind of leading the way. But we've had more people persecuted in this country under this current administration than we've had under all administrations combined. Actually, like 2.5 times more. Under this administration, under, you know, whistleblowers, under the Espionage Act, it was almost not unheard of to do that before this current administration. And it's scary how the federal government has been abusing their power on a lot of different areas. And we thought that a lot of people thought that, you know, it was pretty bad over with the past administration. And they abuse their power. It doesn't matter what party's in office. Abuse of power goes on pretty extensively.
Oh, no. I fully support that statement. But also I want to interject one thing, though. This current initiative that's going out against guns and to have 200 and some odd, I think it is, new FBI people to review these applications or whatever. I support the boosting of the FBI's budget to do those things, but not for that purpose. I think that the whole the gun registration, the current gun registration, when you go to a gun shop and you buy your gun, and they get on the phone with the ATF, and well, you know, or FBI, whoever, it doesn't make a difference. Those groups are, like I said before, woefully underfunded, undermanned, understaffed, underpaid, and they need to be, you know, not so much reviewed about what they do. It's just make it better, streamline it, make it so it's more efficient, and the process is quicker. And in doing so, you're going to catch a few people that are trying to buy a gun that shouldn't be buying a gun.
So you think that would be a good way to get rid of bad, because nobody wants the bad guys to have guns, right? The inner city, you know, the gang wars and some of that, that does need to be cleaned up, or the drug violence, and how do we solve some of those problems?
Well, it was interesting when Governor LePage here in the state of Maine did away with the carrying permit issue altogether. We can carry on our hip on the outside or underneath our arm, doesn't make a difference. As long as you know going into the situation that if you're a felon, you're caught, you're going to go away minimum for at least a year. The bottom line is that we the people had felt and pushed the governor into saying, okay, this is an unnecessary step that it takes too much of our time, take too much of our tax dollars. And so he did away with it. And the fear was, and I was part of a study on this, and we all took part in the study and gave our opinions. The good number of the people in the group said they feared that the nanosecond that had the ability to carry without a permit, that Maine would become the Wild West. If, in fact, since then, gun violence has dropped.
Well, and that's an interesting thing. The stats are like that. I know that Chicago is a gun-free zone, and there's more people that have died from...
Yes. Gun-free,
there's multiple statistics like that, which is anti-intuitive to a lot of people.
Yes. Washington, D.C., Chicago, many parts of California, and what happens? Drive-by shooting. Who's the victim? The person who couldn't shoot back or couldn't defend themselves. And Massachusetts has a castle law, and that states that if you're in your own home and somebody comes through the door with the intent to hurt you or kill you or somebody in your family, and you have a gun in your hand to protect yourself, you are supposed to leave that premises, regardless of whether you get your family out or not. You're supposed to leave. That's just ridiculous.
You're supposed to leave? Like, you can't, like, they can just take your home? You can't shoot them?
Bingo.
You can't protect yourself.
I know of a gentleman who shot a burglar who was trying to stab him, and he shot him in the leg. The burglar got off on a B&E at night with a weapon. The burglar sued him for damages to his leg, and he lost his home. And subsequently, his wife divorced him, and he just...
The burglar got his home?
Yes.
You're kidding me.
And he's moments away from actually doing time himself or shooting the guy. But here in Maine, it's the complete opposite. Not only do we have the right to defend ourselves in our home, but we have what is called, I think it's the stand your ground rule. In other words, like me, you know, I'm 54 years old. I'm just at an age where I'm not going to run away from somebody. You know, if I'm in a situation and somebody's attacking me, you know, I'm going to stand my ground. I'm going to do everything possible to let them know before I ever use deadly force that, you know, I intend to protect myself. And bottom line is
you should have the right to protect. Freedom of protecting yourself, freedom of self-defense should be a fundamental human right.
But the nanosecond you pull that trigger, I don't care what state you're in, Texas, Maine, whatever state that really supports it, that person's family or whoever will sue you. Your gun will be taken away, and throughout the investigation, you'll be out without your ability to protect yourself, and you're already on the defensive, and it sets so much litigation up. It's almost better to take the gun out without any ammunition in it and just use it as a club to beat the guy, you know, because...
Jeez, I think that if you go into somebody's home without their, you know, as a burglar or whatever, then it's free reign.
I agree with you. In a lot of the cases in Florida, Texas, Maine, a few other states, if you do that, you'll go through a small bit of hell, but on the backside, you will come out of it. But it's going to cost you some money in legal fees, and you may or may not get that weapon back.
We need to take a short station break, and we'll be back with Business Game Changers on the Conscious Business Radio Network in a moment.
Are you ready for a game changer? Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in to Business Game Changers Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Pat. I love the maca team. Maca is a turnip-like vegetable that grows at altitudes at and above 13,000 feet in the Andes. As a family-run company of true maca specialists, the maca team's mission is to provide you with fresh, organic, premium-quality maca powders at a fair price. And they are delicious. Many of the customers want to know which is the best maca for their lifestyle, age, activity level, and health goals. These are the three main questions to answer before you purchase. Which color of maca is best for your specific purpose? Is raw or gelatinized the best maca for you? Should you use maca powders, maca capsules, or maca extracts? You can try selections of all of these products to see which will work best for you. To learn more and get a special discount for all of our listeners, visit drpatspicks.com. That's drpatspicks.com.
Transformation Talk Radio is dedicated to the education and awareness of Lyme disease.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Lyme Talk Radio. I'm Dr. Pat, joined here by
Dr. Nusheen Darvish.
Dr. Pat Basile and Dr. Nusheen Darvish will be bringing the most innovative, groundbreaking information, research, treatment innovations, and stories from those it affects every day.
I'm so excited to be talking about this.
We have so much to share.
Dr. Darvish and I are planning to do is connect the dots.
People suffering with all sorts of chronic diseases, it's time. It is time for them to transform.
Tune into Lyme Talk Radio and help keep our mission strong.
For the loyal listeners out there that have been listening to this incredible show on Lyme disease, we are not going to let you down. We're going to come through stronger and enrich the platform for Lyme disease awareness through Lyme Talk Radio. The message will continue. The conversations will become stronger and the healing epic. Tune in to the Angels and Answers Psychic Radio Show with clairvoyants Artie Hoffman and Sky Siegel every Thursday for a two-hour show, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on Transformation Talk Radio. Artie and Sky deliver spiritual and motivational messages with passion and a sense of humor. Call in 800-930-2819 for live and on-air readings. Visit ArtieHoffman.com and SkyOfAngels.com.
Welcome back to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall, and we are talking to Mark Biggie, and he joins us now.
Subsequently, you know, are these states better to live in? Sure, because you have the right to defend yourself. But I wouldn't want to live in Connecticut. I used to live there. New York, New Jersey, California. I used to live in California. I wouldn't move.
Well, if you don't have the right to defend yourself, then how? Then that's the whole point of the Second Amendment. That's part of the erosion of the Second Amendment.
Exactly. Yeah.
Interesting.
I can't get over some people saying, "Well, this is just a measure to do this." Well, they've been, you know, chipping away at the Second Amendment for decades now.
And they do it in a lot of different ways. Like this is an example where if you shoot a burglar who's trying to kill you with a knife, next thing you know, you almost go to jail and you lose your house and everything else. That's interesting.
Man, if you turned it around and he had a gun and you had a knife, you're pretty much going to not have a problem unless you're in New York, Connecticut, or New Jersey.
Well, question for you. You're a Department of Defense contractor, so you have a lot of contacts with the military and you know a lot of military people. Mm-hmm. Do people in the military want the Second Amendment to be diminished, or are they pretty pro Second Amendment people?
What's the military very much pro Second Amendment? Because it's their function to protect and defend our country, our Constitution, our way of life. And you know, I haven't seen too many anti-gun types who will say, "Okay, I want to join the military and go fight in Iraq." I've seen very few. In fact, the only person I know that was it was a Vietnam era veteran. that was opposed the war, but at the last possible moment, they he fought his draft notice, and he actually was part of the project, and you know, but he didn't get to shipped over there. But after all said and done, in the recent years, he and I went to the range, and I put an AK-47 in his hands, and he started shooting it. He was very reluctant, but the nanosecond he did, he fell in love with it. He wanted to buy one. He wanted to buy a lot of them, different kinds, and he got a membership to that gun gun range in Wiscasset, Maine.
Well, okay, I have let's sort of change the subject, but it's still about the federal government abuse of power. But I was looking over the how much federal land the government owns, and it's remarkable how you get across the country. And there's been a lot of maps that have been in the news recently showing what the federal government owns and not owns. It's all over the internet. So if somebody wants to look, just go look up federal government owned land. And it's amazing that you get to about a third, you know, two thirds past, starting on the East Coast, two thirds over, it's almost all federal land. I can't believe.
Look at Alaska; it's two thirds owned by the federal government.
I can't, and Nevada is almost all federal land. I cannot believe how much federal land is owned of our country. And at one point, it was, well, at the beginning of our Constitution, it was prohibited, explicitly prohibited, for federal government to own land. It's almost as if, you know, because our country was started on the East Coast, and then slowly we created states as you went over. And it's almost as if there's a clear line of when the government decided that they were going to own land and just ignore that or change it. And then suddenly they owned almost everything. And it goes to show you that if there isn't a rule protecting you, that they will take all of it almost. But currently there's an Oregon standoff going on over that issue because of the right to own land and people wanting the land back. Do you think that those people are going about, I mean, not, let's, that's almost two different things. Are they going about it the right way? I'm not sure. But do you think they have a point?
Yes, they have a point. But in my opinion, and I'm not boots on the ground there, but in my opinion, I think they should have executed it maybe in a slightly different manner. But I would like to stress the fact that the word standoff, I haven't yet seen any reports of guns being pointed at anybody.
Now, so standoff is just an inflammatory word at this point.
Bingo. Yeah. And to me, it was a bunch of guys with guns on their hips, slung shoulders, sitting around a fire or in a building, and not pointing it at any law enforcement officials. And I'm willing to bet dollars to donuts you had a named person in there from the NRA that would say that, okay, guys, it's done, it's over, we need to go home now. That would break up within 15 minutes right there.
Well,
I fully support what they're doing, but
it might backfire on them because of what they're doing and how they're doing it.
Well, you see, when you bring in somebody that says, okay, you've achieved what you've set out to do, you made this a national issue, and it's become so much of a political debating point that you've put it where it needs to be. It's out in the public. People are talking about it. Change will happen.
Well, I think they want to be in the public eye for years. I think their goal is to get it in the public. But I went and I read about what happened to those poor people, the Hammonds is their name, and there's a lot of abuse by the federal government, just clear abuse. Over these people.
I don't like to be that guy, but or state a specific instance, but Ruby Ridge, I think there was a lot of mistakes made on both sides. I fully support that family. I don't believe that they actually pointed any weapons at FBI people first. There was some issues, I think, with data collection that were erroneous. I think that one or two of the operators on the ground possibly were a little bit overzealous, and that the people in charge of the operation shouldn't have been in charge of the operation. Are situations like that going to happen? Yes. We have police officers annually that make a mistake.
You're going to have crappy police officers, like you're going to have crappy people
say,
in any.
I wouldn't say crappy.
There's probably plenty of really great cops, but every profession has a certain percentage that aren't very good at what they do. And so you're going to run it. There's doctors that are awful. There's doctors that are great, right? There's teachers that are awful. There's teachers that are great. So you're going to have every profession where there's crappy. I'm going to use the word crappy. They're just bad at their job. And just because there's certain percentage that are bad at their job doesn't mean everybody's bad.
Exactly. But with the difference between cops and teachers or doctors, I shouldn't say it so much for doctors or teachers. They have their stressful moments and critical times during there when you're dealing with
doctors can be pretty stressful.
When you're a doctor and you're cutting open somebody. But with law enforcement, I know of law enforcement here in the state of Maine. You're walking up in the middle of the night. There's no backup for at least half an hour to 45 minutes in either way. And you're pulling over a car, say, with New York plates or New Jersey plates. It has all tinted windows, one cracked window down, and the smell of marijuana or what you think you believe to be crack cocaine coming out of the vehicle.
It's very scary.
It came back attached to a different vehicle. What are you going to do? You're walking up there for a small salary every year. You're not very well protected, and I don't want to get into that too far, but I think you know what I'm talking about. And the fact is that you have to make a split decision, and if you suddenly heard a crack or something that sounded like a gunfire, what are you going to do?
You'd be jumpy, probably.
Yeah. A lot of guys would actually draw and shoot, even though they couldn't see somebody in the car. Now, that would be bad, but you're in a situation late at night, and you think you've just been shot at. A good portion of people, I don't care if you're a cop or military, they're going to shoot back first and go for cover. But
the problems aren't the good police officers or situations like that. The problem is like when the boy in Chicago that was shot, you know, walking away, you know, it's just really awful situations where the person that did it should be. Why did you do that?
Shot five times in the back, running away.
Yeah. That's just unacceptable. And the problem is they think it's a culture. The problem is if there's a culture of that inside the police force, and that's what needs to be changed. If the culture is such that they don't respect a certain group of people so that they're more likely to do something against them, that's a problem. But
we're spinning that whole idea of a group of people without getting in the race, but then the two New York cops, one was, I think he was African-American, the other one was Asian, and they received initially very little coverage about their murder. And they were on duty in their car, and they got shot. Basically execution style, I guess. I know that they were shot and killed in the line of duty. And,
yeah, that's awful.
Yeah, and, well, the thing is, the some media outlets didn't even bother with the story, and it took another media outlet to really hammer in the fact that, okay, all lives matter. But if you say all lives matter, you're actually targeting yourself. You're exposing yourself to the Black Lives Matter crowd. To me, life matters.
Well, Black lives do matter, but then does all lives matter, and Black lives matter too. It's just
I like to state it that life matters.
Yes,
because that
shouldn't even be needing to be talking about black. Being honest, we shouldn't even have to say Black lives matter. It should just be so obvious that they matter.
Right. Well, like I said, life matters.
Yeah.
We have to take a short station break. We'll be back in a moment.
Do you want the freedom to spend more time with your loved ones? Travel the world? Live spontaneously? Get ready, because the Chip Justice Show is here. Hosts Dr. Pat Basile and Chip Justice can help you build meaningful success while embracing life. Living a life you love is the end game in this new, inspirational, and empowering show. Positive changes for a life you'll love. Tune in every month on TransformationTalkRadio.com and visit PositiveChangeInstitute.co for more information.
Get ready to experience Truth Talk Radio with host Deb Acker. Tune in to Truth Talk Radio each Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com to illuminate the truth in your daily life as you experience life, love, and abundance from a whole new perspective. This hit show will leave you feeling lighter and bring you into a place of infinite possibilities every day in every way. Visit TruthTalkRadioShow.com for upcoming transformative topics and guests.
Shine On Radio. Find Your Shine with Kelly is the show that celebrates what makes you, you. Join co-hosts Kelly Wadler and Dr. Pat Basile as they break down how to brilliantly fuel and move your body and love what makes you shine. Kelly is a professional arts and wellness coach dedicated to helping brilliant women find their confidence, energy, self-love, and shine. Tune in to Shine On Radio with Kelly and find your shine on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Are you ready for a game changer? Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in to Business Game Changers Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Have you been seeing numbers like 111 and 222 everywhere you go? Do you feel that the universe may be trying to get your attention, perhaps offering a message of some sort? As it turns out, numerical patterns and certain types of geometry form the very fabric of our reality, from cells under a microscope to the astronomy of our night sky. At Stellar Reflections, we offer special sessions which tap into these patterns, designed specifically to support you on your journey. The 111 and 222 activations are sessions activating new patterns in your energy field, which in turn can help you create new patterns in your life. After just one session with a practitioner, either in person or via distance, clients report gaining greater clarity, becoming more intuitive, and honoring their inner truth as they move forward in their lives. Curious about what these transformational sessions might do for you? Call 425-999-9836 or visit StellarReflections.com. That's StellarReflections.com.
Hello, we are back with Business Game Changers on the Transformation Talk Radio Network and Conscious Business Radio, and we are continuing our interview now.
Well, but yeah. Let's get back into this... the land grab situation that, well, we haven't talked about the land grab, but I want to get into that because in Maine, there's a land grab issue. And it's kind of like the Oregon issue where the federal government owns so much of the land. But in Maine, there's some serious issues that are pretty common to this Oregon issue on the West. What is really going on there? It looks like the state, people are serious about splitting the state into two states, one called Maine and one called Northern Massachusetts. So give a brief overview of what's going on, because most people don't know what's going on in the state. And then do you think that could actually happen, where the state could be split into two? Is there enough support for that?
Well, yes, there is enough support. It was once introduced by former Representative Henry Joy from the state of Maine, the two Maines bill. And they would do just that, split the state into two. You have a more of a, conservative Christian community north of Bangor, and you have a lot more, I would say, family values. But then, you know, you have a lot of good valued people south of Bangor, too. But the division between north and south has been getting growing. Before that, actually after that, and the initiative is being revisited and getting sweeping support in the north, and the south had said, look, you know, you can't survive without us. We're basically supporting you. The answer now is, well, if you're supporting us, then you should let us go, because we can survive on our own, whether you think so or not, and it would benefit you greatly if you did, financially, if you didn't have us as a burden, so to speak. And I think Northern Maine would be do just fine without Southern Maine or Northern Massachusetts.
And they're just different in the way they think and how they want to run themselves, and enough people believe that. Because one's urban and one's rural, right?
Night and day, yes. And I can't even underscore that. But the fact is that a lot of this stems, one instance is National Park, or actually now National Monument Initiative, that looks like it's going to get as a done deal by the end of the year by the current administration.
So sounds like the urban folks want to have a federal park and the other people don't. But why is that? What's wrong with having a federal park?
Everybody wants something. Northern Maine says, okay, what about putting an LNG on the coast? And Southern Maine says, uh-uh. And Southern Maine says, what about putting a national park in the north? And we say, uh-uh. The fact is, just the numbers alone, the state of Maine is 67% against a national park. Northern Maine is roughly in the area of 82 to 87%, depending on where you draw the line. And just around the park area here in Millinocket, we're looking at about 92% of the area around where the park would be is totally opposed to it. Now, that said, the park started out 3.2 million acres, which encompasses a vast tract of land that could encompass the town of Millinocket itself, which would thereby mimic the Cuyahoga Valley National Park, where they just came into a town, bought up everybody's house for tax value, and kicked them out.
So why are they doing this? Why are they wanting to turn a big area of Maine into a park?
Well, it's actually one person's dream of a national park that size, Roxanne Quimby, and she is thoroughly, really messed this up bad. Her viewpoint of everybody in Northern Maine pretty much is fat, overweight, welfare people that are totally clueless. And then you look at her, you're like, well, you should throw stones. But the issue here is the fact that I'm going to be good here. The fact is that you know, this administration sent on the taxpayers' dime the Secretary of State and up here with Secret Service in tow to basically tell us that this administration, the executive branch, says, you know, we'll listen to your viewpoints, but at the end of the day, this is our call, and you won't have say one into it when we go forward and make this into a national park, which now is going to be a national monument. We don't have, as it was stated to us, the power to object to it. But our current governor, who I believe should be president, but he said, oh yeah, it's not going to happen, not on my watch. But his term's up at the end of the year, just like the administration's term is up at the same time. So could this administration on the way up make it into a national monument? Well, from the 3.2 million acres down to 150,000 acres, yes. But what is the point of our congressional delegation, or at least 50% of it, is the fact that this person doesn't own the land yet. And that the current people in that grouping area of 150,000, many will lose their homes and of land that they log on.
But so what's the likelihood that this will go through, that they'll just...
99%.
That they're going to take the land and turn it into a
national monument, which at that point then was just a hiccup away from a national park.
Yeah, that's
and
it'll
won't
be that.
You won't be able to hunt on it, and you won't be able to hunt on it. They say, yo, we'll allow hunting.
How much percentage of Maine is it?
Well,
3.2 million acres.
3.2 million is about, I'm just looking on a map here, I would say more than a third.
Oh, my God.
Less than half, but a good chunk of it. But that's the 3.2 million acres. And she went on to, Roxanne Quimby went on to say that, you know, this is going to be 150,000 acres. And then by the end of her conversation, she stated that at the end of her conversation that the 3.2 million acres is not off the table.
Oh, geez. Well, we'll have to watch that and see what really happens. Well, we only have about 5 minutes left here, and so I want to get into what your company provides to the military. You do mobile thermal perimeter surveillance systems.
Well, it's a vehicle that was initiated a long time ago, a project that the money that came in from the federal government was diverted by a congressman unlawfully, and gave to another project. And but we've struggled to bootstrap every single small aspect of the project. We haven't built the prototype yet, but we've shown that we can stop greater threats at lesser weights. We can stop a 50 caliber threat from a heavy 50 caliber weapon at less than 20 pounds per square foot. Heavy blasts from IEDs and or RPGs that current vehicles can't sustain. Same with, you know, you can't hit them with a 50 cal.
So would this be cheaper for the military? Would it be cheaper and more effective than what they currently are using?
When you come down to capability versus cost, yes. And that and the fact that Maine needs the jobs. I would be more than happy to and willing and really relish the ability to talk to some of these people who are looking at going into this next round of government without bringing up the current focus on the race. But and, you know, I've offered to, you know, talk to these people, but, you know, getting traction from a small company in the state of Maine, who cares? I'm not General Dynamics. I don't get the limelight, and I don't get the defense budget. And that's when, you know, in the 2010 budget, when they said earmarks are gone, that only applied to small businesses and small universities.
Oh, I'm sure. Yes.
Earmarks are still
that's
very
a problem.
Much alive.
Earmarks yes. are huge. It just doesn't go to you. It goes to the big guys. So you also serve police departments and federal agencies. What services do you provide them?
Well, I'd like to see police cars. Regular police cruisers have armor in the doors of the car. So you're not driving around in an up-armored vehicle. You're pulling up on a car stop. They start shooting at you. You have something to get behind. Less than one-half of 1% of any vehicle cruisers have armor in them.
Interesting. And
it's just wrong. And these guys, you know, shooting not just 9mm bullets that maybe a door might or might not be able to stop. They're shooting heavier caliber weapons, and cops just they get the short end of the stick. They get a lot of bad press. But the bottom line is, you know, you get into a shootout.
They need to be protected.
Yes, they do.
Well, do you have a website? Do you have a website that people?
Yes, it's biggiedefense.com.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you so much coming onto the show today, and people should check out your website, and it's a very interesting conversation. I know there's big changes coming to just the Second Amendment and land rights, and it seems like there's a lot of stuff going on in this area, a lot of tension.
I think the listeners should know that whatever gets done as far as any laws that happen, they can't be implemented before the January 1st, effectively, or pretty much at all. And that anybody coming in after that, most likely, I'll give it 99% of the chance, will undo those changes.
Well, that'll be interesting to see. Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Not a problem. Thank you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode of Business Game Changers. You can hear that episode as well as many other episodes at sarahwestall.com. All of my past episodes are up there for you to reach. And I hope you tune in next Monday, where we will have Dr. Pat on to talk about her adventures in building an international media company. She will be talking about the future of media and how it's changing significantly, and how the mergers and acquisitions of all the different media companies have put that in the hands of so few companies, and how that's affecting us here in the States and around the world as well. So I hope you join us next Monday for that. And for now, I hope everyone has an absolute wonderful day.
You've been listening to Business Game Changers with host Sarah Westall. Tune in each Monday at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, as Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in Mondays at 12 noon Pacific time and learn more about Sarah at sarahwestall.com today.